KPBS On Demand is supported by Zocalo Public Square, presenting a panel discussion and screening with food and drinks, exploring the history of deportation with MacArthur geniuses Alex Rivera and Kelly Little Hernandez at Bread and Salt on December 13th. Sign up for no cost at zps.la/KPBS.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, how lawful are boat strikes in the Caribbean? Our military and veteran affairs reporter Andrew Dyer gets reaction from local military and legislative leaders on the lawfulness of boat strikes that have killed several people. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are investigating boat strikes, but the U.S. military, by the U.S. military in the Caribbean. Last week, two survivors of a September 2nd strike on an alleged drug trafficking boat were killed while clinging to debris in the water. Reports say that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered there be no survivors. If that is true, it would violate human rights law. Joining me to talk about it is Andrew Dyer. He's military and veteran affairs reporter for KPBS. Andrew, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. So bring me up to speed about the September 2nd strike that's really at the center of this. What can you tell me about it?
So September 2nd, that was the first of about 23 strikes on alleged drug boats, first in the Caribbean and more lately pivoting to the Pacific. It was the first strike, but the thing that pushed it more in the news was over Thanksgiving, a story that during this strike, we knew that it hit a boat that killed people, but that there was survivors in the water who were then killed in a second strike. It's come out since then that, 45 minutes passed between the first and second strikes, and this has raised a whole lot of issues with not just that strike, but the legality of all of the strikes.
Well, over the weekend, Defense Secretary Hegseth took some questions at a defense forum at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. He said he fully supports the September strike made by Admiral Bradley. Take a listen.
I was told, hey, there had to be a reattack because there were a couple folks that could still be in the fight. Access to radios, there was a link-up point of another potential boat, drugs were still there, they were actively interacting with them, had to take that read. I said, Roger, sounds good. From what I understood then and what I understand now, I fully support that strike. I would have made the same call myself.
All right, so what else, what other information came out of that conference?
So, Pete Hegseth is kind of says the same thing or similar things every time he talks publicly. He talks about bringing back warrior ethos to the military. He talks about taking the shackles off of military commanders and letting them make tough decisions. This all kind of goes back to Pete Hegseth's whole outlook on the military. If you look at all of his time on Fox News, he's been a big champion of service members accused of war crimes, advocating for them directly to the president during his first term. So it all kind of just falls into his overall worldview about what the military can do.
Listening to his account in that soundbite, does his account of what happened line up to what was first said about what happened?
Well, no. The initial reports was that he ordered kill everybody on the boat. And they came out and he denied giving a kill 'em all order. That would be a war crime. That is illegal. You cannot say no, take no prisoners. That's a war crime. So he was very quick to reject
that
he had said that. They pushed back against that. Then he said that he wasn't in the room when it happened. He was very busy that day. And he said that he made it very clear that the person who made the decision to strike a second time was the admiral in charge of the special operations.
So the story has changed. Let's zoom out a bit. Why is the U.S. military even targeting these boats in the first place?
Well, President Trump says that drug trafficking is a type of war against the U.S., right? Deaths from fentanyl and whatnot. drugs are bad for the country. They're harming Americans. Therefore, part of national defense is defending against drug trafficking. This has always typically been a function of law enforcement, the Coast Guard specifically, and DEA and other federal agencies. But Trump has this term turned the military into the drug war. And they're basically treating drug trafficking as if they were members of ISIS in Ramadi in 2014, 15.
Have they presented any evidence of drug trafficking?
Well, not to the public. Everything is couched in language of intelligence and national security and whatever. They have said that they know who they're hitting and they know what is on the boats, but they're not releasing publicly, at least, how they know what they know. But they assure us that they know what they're doing.
They released it to Congress?
Congress has been briefed, but it's not been there's been a lot of complaints from Congress that they are not getting enough information.
Okay. Well, how does international human rights law apply in a situation like this?
This really gets down to the legality of the strikes in the first place, because to talk about what laws may or may not have been violated, you have to understand which set of laws these strikes function under. If what the Trump administration says, that these designated terrorist groups of drug cartels are valid military targets, then the strikes fall under the law of armed conflict and, you know, the law of war that the military functions under in times of war. If, as has also been argued, the president cannot just designate anybody he wants as a terrorist, he does not have an authorization for use of military force, the AUMF, which that was the permission slip for all of these drone strikes in the Middle East over 20 years was under that initial 9/11 AUMF. There is no AUMF for Central America. So regardless, DOJ says that these are legal. So if they are not legal, right, then the Navy is functioning under human rights law. And human rights law says that a military can only engage a target if they are, like, receiving fire from them. So if this drug boat was attacking a Navy ship, the Navy ship has a right to engage them and fire on them. Mm-hmm. Absent that, a drone strike, for example, the only way the drone strike would be legal is if these are legal military, these are legal combatants. Mm-hmm. Again, something that is in dispute. Even if they are legal combatants, once they are in the water and once they are no longer able to fight, they are no longer valid legal targets. That's why you hear the language of Hegseth and everybody from the administration. You hear them say every time that they're still in the fight. These guys were still in the fight. They were trying to radio for backup. They were trying to get back in the – they're doing something that makes them a valid legal target, because absent that, it is a clear violation of the law of armed conflict.
Hmm. Well, I understand there's actually historic precedent for these human rights rules dating back to World War II. What did you find there?
Well, it does go back further, right? Navies have always kind of functioned over these international laws of the sea, and there's a lot of tradition and a lot of history there. But there is a very specific case from 1944 where a German U-boat torpedoed a Greek steamer called the Peleus. It sank. The U-boat left. And then they returned a little while later, and there were survivors in the water. And the captain ordered his men to destroy the remaining debris. They wanted to hide the fact that there was a U-boat in the area. They didn't want any of the debris from the sunk ship. That was the captain's argument. So they machine-gunned survivors and threw grenades into life rafts. But a few people did survive and played dead and ended up, after the war, testifying. The British court-martialed five of these submarine U-boat crew members. Five were found guilty of war crimes. Three of them, including the U-boat's captain, were executed by a firing squad. So there is the illegality of killing survivors of shipwrecked sailors is something that it goes back a long way. There's a long precedent for it. And you can see that, at least in one case in World War II, there was some very harsh consequences for these violations.
Yeah, this has long been established. You also got the reaction from San Diego Democratic Representative Sarah Jacobs. She served on the House Armed Services Committee. That's what she serves on now. What did she tell you?
So she's really concerned about the legality of the book strikes. She does not think they're legal. There is a lot of the DOJ memo that says these boat strikes are authorized. This is that they don't have the AUMF, like I said, but they're functioning under this permission slip from the Justice Department that says they're legal. Now, what that their legal justification is not public. That is another thing that they are not saying, but they have presented that to Congress. And Sarah Jacobs said she said she does not find it very convincing. In fact, she called their rationale bonkers.
Well, I want to talk briefly about Democratic Senator Mark Kelly, who's under scrutiny by the Department of Defense. Last month, he and several other Democrats posted a video telling U.S. service members they could refuse illegal orders. President Trump responded on social media saying that making the video could be punishable by death. What is the latest there?
Mark Kelly is under investigation by the Pentagon. He is a retired officer. He can be recalled to active duty and face court-martial should the Pentagon choose to pursue that track. Now, military justice doesn't quite work that way. They have to go in front of a judge and have a sort of a grand jury, the military's version of a grand jury.
But, I mean, given the current situation here, was that video warranted? Was it legal?
Sure. They're not wrong, right? It is illegal for a service member to follow an illegal order. And in fact, under the UCMJ, everybody in the military, that's that old Nuremberg defense that the Nazis used, that they were just following orders. That is not a defense. You cannot say you're just following orders. And that is kind of what they were reminding service members of. The problem here in the difficulty and why it puts military service members in such a difficult position is that the presumption is always that your orders are lawful. You govern yourself every day understanding that whatever you're being told is okay. Now to second guess that, like the UCMJ says, you cannot follow an illegal order. You have to refuse it. But it's also against the rules to refuse a legal order. So you have to be ready to face consequences for refusing to follow an order if you believe that something is illegal. That's a very difficult position to put anybody in because the military is hierarchical. You know, everybody answers to somebody. So it puts service members on the ground, the people pushing the buttons and dropping those ordnance and whatever, puts them in a really tough position.
Real quickly, in the last few seconds, what happens next in this boat strike investigation, and even in this video?
Well, right now, they're trying to get this video released publicly, the video of the second strike. There's a big push to get that out there from both Democrats and Republicans. And, we're just kind of waiting to see both the Senate and the House Armed Services Committee are investigating. And I expect there to be hearings. We just don't know when those hearings will be.
All right. We'll continue to follow it. I've been speaking with Andrew Dyer. He covers military and veteran affairs for KPBS. Andrew, thanks for your insight and expertise.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego Art Power, presenting Campana Sobre Campana, Christmas in Mexico, an evening of music and dance with Mariachi Garibaldi de Jaime Cuellar and Ballet Folklorico del Rio Grande, December 13 at the Epstein Family Amphitheater. Details at artpower.ucsd.edu.